And welcome to another Weekend Wrap. Thankfully, Scorpus has saved my ass and saved everyone listening from listening to me drone on for 45 minutes. How are you going, mate? Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but we're going to push on anyway while that's all carrying on. Sorry about this rather amateurish start to the evening. Wasn't it an amateurish night on Saturday night by the Crows? It was a sensational win, and we will obviously cover that in full detail during the show. Also, we'll also give you a wraparound of the weekend's events, some interesting results. And hopefully Scorpus, I don't know what's happening, Scorpus, but I can't hear you, mate. I can see your little red button coming up, but there ain't no sound. So let me see if I can work that out. In the meantime, let's go through the scores while all that's sorting out. Obviously, on Friday night, we had an absolute non-event. The Bombers only just turning up over the Hawks, and really, I don't even watch the game. Hawks getting up comfortably by 108 points, paying $9 apparently for a win over 100 points. So unfortunately I didn't get on, but for those who did, congratulations. The Hawks did you a favour. Saturday we had the Western Bulldogs squeaking past Port Adelaide in a pretty high quality game, I've got to say, by 3 points. You know, as much as you don't want the Power to win, it would have been nice to see them get up and allow us to draw even with the Bulldogs on the ladder. But anyway, the Dockers had a surprisingly comfortable win over the Lions. The Lions really not travelling well at the moment. Dockers getting up by 83 points. The Cats having a really solid win over the Roos. The Roos obviously suffering a couple of injuries during the match fairly early on that didn't help them out, but the Cats winning by 5 goals. Today, St Kilda, you wouldn't have picked this, got up by 32 points over Carlton. Carlton would be quite disappointed with that. A chance for Carlton to really stake a claim for that eighth position, and they weren't able to take it against a team who last week just didn't look anywhere near it. So back to the pack for the Blues. The Tigers getting over the Suns in a hard-fought win by 17 points. Probably saved a heck of a lot of scrutiny and probably half an hour worth of rhetoric on the footy shows this week over Hardwick. And the Giants having a really, really good win over Sydney, 15 goals 15 to 9 goals 9 up there at Metricon. A really solid win by the Giants. Obviously, you know, it's clear that they're a much better team at home, and they proved that beating who I considered up until this week the form team of the competition quite convincingly in the end. How you going, Scorpus? Are you any better now?
Yeah, let me just give it a quick test. Yeah, it's not too bad. Yeah, it's a bit better now. So, yeah, I think all I could press on.
Good on you, mate. Obviously, the game that we're all cock-a-hoop about really is the win by the Crows on Saturday night over the Eagles over there at Domain Stadium. For those who haven't heard, and I doubt there's any, Crows 15 goals 15-105 getting up over West Coast 11 goals 10-76 after being outplayed in the first half, certainly up until probably I reckon midway through the second quarter. The Crows really turned it on and kept the Weagles goalless or scoreless in the last quarter for the first time in the West Coast history at Subiaco. So a fantastic win for the Crows there. What were your initial thoughts there, Scorpus?
Yeah, it's a really interesting game. It was kind of a tale of two halves. Definitely interesting in the first half. I think we suffered from a lot of, yeah, just sloppiness around the ball, but then we piled on a ton of goals in the last, you know, couple of quarters. It was a good win.
Yeah, it certainly was. I felt like we changed our structure after initially being content to sit back and get them on the counter. They really stepped up their presence at the contest, and they were ragdolling us a little bit at the contest there in the first half. And I think Pikey in his press conference basically intimated that it was an effort situation from our midfielders, and they certainly did step up the effort in the second half and went away with a win. Is that the way you saw it, mate?
Yeah. Our effort was really poor in the first sort of couple of quarters, I guess. And then it just seems like we almost just flicked a switch and, yeah, managed to put on a huge amount of effort throughout the centre. I thought Sloan and Tomo, Matty Crouch, they were all fantastic in those later parts of the game.
Yeah, really one of those games where you always felt like we were going to go down in an honourable loss, and then that last quarter, just to flick the switch like we did. And, you know, there's talk of West Coast having a bit of a flu going through the club or something or other. I just put it down to our structure holding up under pressure. And at the end of the game, basically, they had no answer to it. I just want to go through some stats here on the game itself before we get down to individuals. The key stat for me, apart from us winning the disposal count by 60-odd, was the uncontested possessions and the mark count. We had, 60-odd more uncontested possessions than they did. And we actually took, where's that stat gone? Yeah, we actually took 107 marks to 59 for the game. Just shows, I think, that West Coast were quite happy to play the ball inside, to play the game inside, and to bustle it forward and to rely on their big marking forwards to kick a score. And when we were able to wrest control of the inside contest and dish it out to our running players, our outside players, we were able to maintain possession for large parts of the game, particularly the second half. And that's really where it was won. Our tackle count, 89 to 64, indicates that we ended up winning the inside contest. And certainly, as I just mentioned, with those uncontested possessions, the marking stats, it just indicates to me that once we were able to get first use, they really couldn't get it back off us. Some other stats here. We went relatively well in effective disposal, 72.8. We had 279 to 216 effective disposals. Again, an indication, particularly in the second half when the game was there to be won, that we were able to force West Coast into ineffective disposals. Really, everything else was quite even, but it was those key areas and the fact that we had possession of the ball for large parts of the second half, and really the game was played in our forward 50 in the second half and in the last quarter in particular. You know, had it not been for when we got to about 15 points up and we kicked a couple of points, I thought, oh, here we go, we're going to throw it away after all this. All this good work, but yeah. they just really didn't have an answer.
Yeah, I thought one of the things that really came across to me was you were mentioning the marks earlier, and we had 14 marks inside 50 to 8. And yeah, so that was a lot of, being able to take marks in the forward 50 and lots of set shots on goal. And I thought our accuracy in that department was a bit better than the previous weeks.
You know, I spent a bit of time watching bits and pieces of the replay this afternoon, and it was quite evident to me that the two key areas where we got on top was Scott Thompson got control of Pritis in the middle. Pritis was, and to a lesser degree, Gaff, were just winning the entire contest, and really we weren't getting first use, which was resulting in us having to do a lot of our attacking from half back. And secondly, was the ability of our forwards to just create space. Whereas whenever the ball went into the Eagles forward 50 in the second half, not that it went in that often, it was a crowded contest, and we were able to win the ball at ground level.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you were just mentioning earlier, Andrew Gaff. I thought he was pretty much one of the worst players on the ground. I mean, he had 22 disposals at 40% disposal efficiency. Like, that's pretty bad. And I think whoever was doing a little bit of a job on him, maybe it was McKay at times, yeah, basically completely cut him out of the game. And yeah, I think our forward line definitely showed its power on the weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I was taking particular notice of the matchups when I was watching the replay, and it looked like Sloaney was actually manning up on Gaff a lot at the stoppages.
Okay. Yeah.
And Thompson, through most of the game was looking after Pritis's, obviously two inside warriors there. Pritis had 29 disposals, but didn't really, after half time, didn't really have much of an impact on the game simply because he couldn't get free. Whereas in the first, the second half of the first quarter and much of the second quarter, they really got on top in the midfield, and it looked like their midfield was going to run us ragged. But as I mentioned earlier, and Pike indicated in his presser, we stepped up the effort. I think Matt Crouch stepped up his effort in the second half. I think Tomo obviously stepped up his effort in the second half. And Rory Sloane just played out of his skin as usual. That was key, I think, in us being able to get the ball to the outside and then hold possession.
Yeah, you're mentioning there's a whole ton of players. I thought, in fact, it was almost three quarters of our side that really just flicked the switch and really stood up. I thought Rory Atkins was poor in some of his disposals in the first part of the game, but he kicked pretty much the match winning goal for us in that last quarter, and I thought he was really good from that point on. Richard Douglas, he also, I thought, didn't have much of an impact throughout the first couple of quarters, but some of his marking efforts were pretty solid. Brody Smith, again, stepped up towards the end. Jared Lyons, Matty Crouch was almost completely ineffective in the first two quarters. And yeah, he just turned on beast mode in that third quarter.
Yeah. It really was quite an even, apart from Sloaney, who I thought was a standout.
Yeah,
I think it was quite an even performance, and you're right. The midfield as a group, I think, were asked a pretty stern question at half time by Pikey, and they responded. I mean, a lot of our usual suspects who are quite good with the ball were a little bit down. You mentioned Atkins; he only went at 60% disposal efficiency, which is quite low for him, and only had 9 disposals for the game. Oh, no, sorry, 15 disposals for the game, only 8 kicks, 7 handballs. So that's a little bit off the output that you'd want from him. Jared Lyons, 17 contested possessions. No one can question his inclusion anymore, I don't think. He's certainly not star quality. He's not going to be the bloke that does the Patrick Dangerfield 48 disposal games. But inside the contest, his ability to win the contest, lay a tackle, put in a block, feed the ball out, and hit a target when needed, I think he's got a real spot in our midfield rotation. Scotty Thompson, as I mentioned, after halftime, he ended up the game with 11 contested possessions out of his total of 24. 12 tackles too for Tomo. Which I think was almost a game high. I think Pritis might have had 12 as well. Most of those were probably on each other. But
yeah, he did.
Scott Thompson's ability to wrest control of that inside ball in the second half, I think really has been underplayed on the big footy boards, and I think it was instrumental. Watching the replay this afternoon, it was his intent that lifted and his willingness to put in second and third efforts to stop West Coast breaking clear that was really instrumental in us starting to get first use of the ball, him and Matty Crouch.
Well, like I was mentioning on some of the big footy boards, that I thought Scott Thompson got a massive rocket at halftime. I mean, some of the stuff that he was doing in the first quarter first and second quarters was old Tomo, some of the, yep, getting sucked into the contest and, really struggling to contain Matty Pritis, who was getting quite effective clearances. I mean, he ended up with 9 or 8 for the game. But, in that second half, all of the issues that I was having with him throughout the match, almost they completely disappeared, and he suddenly became this incredibly effective inside mid, especially, like you were mentioning a little bit earlier, stopping Matty Pritis. I mean, some of Pritis' clearances in that second part were just him trying to kick it away from the pack. Tomo was instantly tackling him, him in just a second. I mean, yeah, Tomo was absolutely incredible in that second half, in sort of, as you were mentioning, arresting the issues that we're having in the centre and, getting on top and helping us to the win.
And it's quite obvious to me, having watched West Coast closely now, that they really are a one-trick pony. because as Pritis's influence was quelled, Shuey and Gaff found it all of a sudden very difficult to get the ball, and Maston as well. So it really is a case of stop Pritis, stop West Coast midfield, really, as it, well, it certainly was this week. The other bloke I really want to mention is Sammy Jacobs. We were all wondering the impact that Nat Newey was going to have on the game, and yes, Nick Nat might have been carrying a bit of an Achilles into the game, but he certainly appeared to be able to jump. But Sammy Jacobs, 14 disposals, 7 marks, 5 tackles, 36 hit-outs. When you compare that to a combined effort of 57 hit-outs from Nat Newey and Lycett, only 2 tackles between them and only 16 disposals between them, and crucially, I think, particularly where Nick Nat is concerned, only 3 marks for the game from Nat Newey. And I thought Sam Jacobs' ability to compete and win his fair share of the hit-outs, together with his ability to get around the ground, provide us a link, even lay a tackle or two, I thought he was key also, particularly in that second half, of getting us back in the contest.
Yeah, Jacobs was much, much better around the ground than both Nat Newey and Lycett. In fact, I'd go as far to say that Scott Lycett was a passenger for West Coast on the night. He was completely ineffective. Yeah, I was really impressed with Sammy Jacobs' work, especially whenever Nat Newey looked like he was going to get an effective touch, it just seemed to not go anywhere that was constructive. And the way that Sammy Jacobs was managing, especially in the second half, to get his taps directly down to our midfielders and arrest the control that Nat Newey was having earlier in the match was really impressive. And I think that was a big turning point for the match as well, especially, you know, you get clean hit-outs to Lyons, Tomo, Sloan, Matty Crouch, you're going to go a long way to, you know,
absolutely,
changing that clearance differential from, you know, it was pretty negative in the first couple of quarters, but we ended up having 40 clearances each for the match, which I think was a big testament to the effort in the second half.
Yeah, and I reckon, if I remember rightly, I think we outnumbered them in the clearance numbers by about 15 in the second half. So when you consider that both Nat Newey and Lycett spent 65 and 63% of the game on the ground respectively, and Sammy Jacobs was on for 81% of the game with only, small chop-outs from JJ here and there. I just thought Sam's game, I think, has been underrated in the media, and I think he was very instrumental in us getting back into the game. Welcome, Macca. How are you going?
Evening, gentlemen. How are you? I'm sorry I'm late.
Nice of you to turn up, mate.
I had a bit of drama with the missus. She wasn't feeling too good. And
oh, that's no good.
I did a little bit of attending to her, and she's now in bed, so I'm here.
Well, our best wishes to Mrs. Macca. Hopefully she's feeling better soon, mate. We've gone through our initial thoughts and a few stats, but interested to hear your take, mate. You and I, obviously, being the only two, I think, that were really bullish about the Crows' chances this weekend.
Come on, I tipped them.
Well, I know I did. I tipped them by 20. I was going to be 23, but Phoenix talked me to make it 24.
Yeah, so what do you think, mate?
Well, I was really worried at the beginning of the game because of the fact that we weren't winning the midfield as I thought we would win the midfield, and of course that put a lot of pressure going forward, and for West Coast going forward. And our backs were doing pretty well, but they were occasionally sneaking one in there. But I think the turning point came for me when either by Pike's instructions or whether it was a team thing, they turned it into a brawl rather than an open game. And once we turned it into... And once we turned it into a scrap, and we started to get on top in the scrap, and once we got on top in the scrap, then we gradually released it, and we finally got our game going. And once we got the game really up and running, then they couldn't stop us.
Yeah, that's basically exactly what Scorpus and I were just talking about, the fact that we were able to start winning the inside ball. And I don't know how you saw it, Macca, but we were just saying that once... Tomo was able to shut down Pritis's influence, and we started getting first use, they just couldn't get the ball off us.
Yeah, actually, that's quite right. You know, a lot of people overlook the fact that the role that Tomo played in this particular game, it wasn't one of his normal games, it was in the sense of giving it 100% effort. But he, as you said, he did shut down Prittis, and our little version of Prittis in Crouchy, he sort of took over getting a lot of clearances in too.
Yeah, that's right. He ended up with good numbers after a slow start. I think Matty Crouch had 5 clearances, Tomo had 6, Rory Sloane had 9. A lot of those around the ground stoppages. So I think too, we actually managed our midfield better than West Coast did. I was just looking at the time on ground stats, which I seem to be obsessed about for some reason. Again, none of our midfielders spent more than 78% time on the ground. Sloane at 78, Tomo at 76, Matty Crouch 68, Jared Lyons 71, D-Mac 68. I guess you could probably put those as our main midfield players, whereas all of the West Coast midfield were up over the 80. Prittis had 85%, Shuey 83, Gaff 84, Maston 89. And it just seemed to me that that was indicative of them seeming to run out of legs. And it looked to me that no one's really paid much attention to this, but I think batting an extra man deep in the midfield this week was a very key selection to our performance in the last quarter, because I think Pike realised that we potentially had the manpower to really stretch them from an endurance point of view in the middle, because we're obviously able to roll blokes like Betts and Cameron and Rory Atkins through there, in addition to the blokes that I just mentioned. And it just shows, because their first-string midfielders spent, you know, 85 to 89% time on ground, which is high for a midfield.
Yeah, you can't really argue with that. And I think you were very discerning there with that point you made about the extra midfielder. It's a bigger ground. You've got to cover a lot more ground when you're on the ball. And by making the rotations of the midfield so that they're not on as long as they would normally be on, and running that extra midfielder, I think that's why we had such fresh legs in the last quarter. So I think that's a very good point you made there.
Yeah, how do you see that, Scorpus?
Well, one of the interesting things is they were mentioning on the coverage that it seemed in the last quarter, even the third quarter as well, that West Coast was rotating more than Adelaide was. So even though they had a lot of their midfielders, you know, with huge time on ground numbers, they still seemed to be needing to rotate more, and that, you know, come the end of the game when we were getting a massive run on, obviously their fitness was significantly inferior to ours. And yeah, it's just a testament to our good management, I think, especially guys like Matty Crouch, who we saw in the St Kilda game, he exploded out of the blocks in the first quarter and then he fell away towards the end of the game. We really didn't want to see that again this week, especially, you know, how tough it was going to be to come back in the front. So yeah, we really needed those guys up and firing. So yeah, good management, definitely.
Yeah. The other shout-out, too, I think, has to go to our back six. I mean, at various stages, particularly during the first half, they were under siege. And I felt that given the supply that was coming into the West Coast forward 50, blokes like Lever and Talia and Hardigan and Cheney played very well. I thought Luke Brown was instrumental in his role on Lacroix. Lacroix was pretty much ineffectual for the game. Another underrated performance by Brownie. Should be All-Australian, from what I can tell, isn't even in the conversation at the moment, which just goes to show you the pundits in Victoria really don't have much of a clue about how we play the game. And I felt like in the second half, when we were able to control the ball, control the play, you know, the fact that I think West Coast... We outnumbered their inside 50 count 40 to 12 in the second half, and I think they only had 2 or 3 inside 50s in the last quarter. Now, that's unheard of in any game, let alone when you're playing a top 8, potentially top 4 contender on their home deck.
Very good point. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the way that a lot of our... defenders were managing to press up the ground, especially I think Lever and Cheney were really instrumental in their ability to sort of, I don't know, make a wall on sort of that defensive 50 line. They were just cutting off absolutely everything that went even close to coming into West Coast's forward half of the ground. And they were really, really solid in their ability to kick up the ground to the advantage of our, you know, faster midfield players as well. So I think Chaney, while we did see that goal that was conceded on him by just the sheer strength of, oh, his name escapes me at the moment, Jack Darling, that one goal in the goal square, that was probably his only blemish for the game. I thought he was really solid apart from that. Jakey Lever, I mean, 18 touches for a key position defender, not as good as his 30 from the other day, but, I mean, still a very good result for him. And his ability to find space and time in the congestion is really first class. It's really showing how highly rated he was as a junior, and it's showing for us at the moment.
Yeah, and Hartigan and Lever having 18 one-percenters for the match. Hartigan with 11. I thought the game was a real test for Kyle Hartigan this week. I felt like at times there was hints of him returning to that guy who lacks a bit of confidence in his own ability. But he held it together. He kept Darling relatively quiet, and I think his effort and intensity of the contest was first rate. And I think he held it together and did a really good job. And like you said, Lever was just an intercept beast, and his ability, along with Chaney, to repel their attempts at going forward, particularly in that last quarter, and just allow us to play the game in our forward 50 in the last quarter, was second to none. A very even performance. It was good to see Smith and Seisman basically get identical numbers, 22 posies each, both taking 6 marks. The only difference, Seisman, 7 tackles, which I think is a real element to his game that's underrated.
Oh, definitely. I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah, very, very good.
Better than
very
Smith.
Good. You know, they combined for 13 inside 50s, which is what they're there for. 6 of Smith and 7 to Seisman. You know, they're doing exactly what they've been in the team for. And I think, again, this is very indicative of how Pikey is coaching them. Everyone's got a role to play. You play your role, you play it to the best of your ability, and the sum of the parts equals a pretty good outcome. And I think that really is the tail of the tape of this particular game, don't you?
Yeah, well, if you take Seisman, for example, you mentioned the fact about his tackling. One of the things that got him out of favour with Bucks was the fact that he thought that Siege wasn't going in hard enough with the tackling and with the chasing, etc. But you can see now that Seisman's got total buy into our game plan, and he's been a real, very, very good pickup, hasn't he?
I think there's a lot to be said, Macca, for clearly defined roles. And I think Pikey has alluded to this a number of times in press conferences after match, that the players are getting a clearer picture of how he wants them to play. And I think that's referring to players knowing what's expected of them, knowing their role. And I remember our first player interview of the year on Tuesday Night Live with David McKay. He said very similar things about having clarity of direction and knowing your role and knowing what's expected of you. And I think the team, the way they're playing now, you know, aside from Rory Sloan, who just does a bit of everything, they all seem to be doing what they need to do and playing their role. And they seem to be very clear about the role that's expected of them. And they all have confidence in each other to do that. And as a result, we're getting some very positive outcomes at the moment.
Oh, definitely. I mean, some of the other things to note too is that while everyone's got a defined role, there's still versatility throughout a ton of our players on the ground. I mean, if, for example, someone decided to tag Smith, then we've got, you know, Seedsman and Atkins and Laird and Lynch and all those players who could fill that outside role and still become, you know, the crucial linking part of our game plan. And it just seems as well that Pike enjoys tinkering a lot with some of those just really minor things throughout the game. Like, I know last week we saw Jenkins playing a little bit further up the ground. This week he was a bit more deep. So it's just interesting to see that he's keeping it fresh and keeping it changing it up so that, you know, the opposition coaches can't just immediately tag one of our players or set up in the way that they want to, because we still have that versatility to surprise people.
Yeah, definitely. And Macca touched on it earlier when he said we turned it into a bit of a scrap. And you could see that we started to squeeze up the ground a bit. We certainly didn't allow as much width as we gave them in the first quarter and a bit. We started to get more numbers around the contest and really make the ground a little bit smaller around the contest. And that was a notable change in tactics as far as I was concerned after half time.
Yeah, you made a very good reference there again, you know, to the tactics and what we did. And I just want to mention this little thing about Pikey. I think, you know, Pikey's a master tactician and I think he's a very, very good coach. Roach this morning was on 5AA, was blasting away about the fact that, you know, and he's been virtually critical of Pike for not saying much at his press conferences, not giving much away. And they kept waffling on and on and on about this, him and Leif Forrest. And it really did get to me. You know, I rang up about that and another particular point. It actually ended up getting a $50 voucher to go to semis on the Marina. So it was worth
nice.
It was worth getting the shits with Rich, wasn't it?
So you're going to put that up as a contest prize for Tuesday Night Live, are you, mate? Or are you going to just keep that one to yourself with the missus?
I'll be a pig. I'll keep it.
I mean, I don't understand Rich. He's, you know, for someone who's a chief football writer, he doesn't write the main articles of the day anymore in the Advertiser. He tweets about Italy 2 minutes after the local team's biggest win of the season. He's become a parody of himself, to be honest. I rarely listen to him on the radio. The only time I ever listen to read his articles is by mistake. I read an article and I think, God, this sounds like Rucci, and I look at the right, oh shit, it's Rucci, and then I stop reading. And if he's listening, I don't make any apologies because, you know, if you want to be the chief football writer in the only print media in town, in a two-team town, you've got to do a little bit better than what he puts out.
Yeah, look, you're right about that. But you know, even out of an idiot, some truth can come out of them. We've got
one proof of that, mate.
No, I'm talking about Roots again because they were talking about Pollock, and he was saying that somebody rang up and said that Pollock has been very disappointing because he's not very consistent with his football. And he made the point that he missed a season. And, once you miss a season, your next season's not going to be like everybody thinks it should be because you're going to have in and outs and some poor performances. And they had been, during the week, critical of Brad Crouch. And I said, well, surely that would apply to Brad Crouch every bit as much as it applies to Pollock. I think that's what got me the voucher because I agreed with him there. But and I think we are very critical of Brad Crouch, and he did miss a whole season.
Look, it's a really good point, and I think people, particularly in the Victorian media, can smell another Dangerfield situation, and they're going hard at it in terms of suggesting that, he's not going to be satisfied with the way he's being treated at the moment and blah, blah, blah. But the simple fact of the matter is he hasn't played a lot of football, and when he did come into the team earlier in the year, he just looked not one step off the pace, but about five steps off the pace. So whilst there was a case to be made, and I was certainly one of those people that that thought that he should have been given time to find his feet within the AFL team, I think most of us have been proven wrong in the way that they've managed Crouchy, and also the way that they've structured our midfield, because you can't really argue with the way the midfield's been travelling over the last month.
It just seems a bit ridiculous that there's all this suggestion that Crouch is going to leave and that somehow he's upset with the fact that he's not playing AFL. I mean, it's just, he's a young player. He knows that, you know, there's going to be times when he's going to have to go back to the SANFL, even with, you know, his known talent and work on things. And if he's getting, you know, suddenly upset about the fact that he's had to play, what, like three or four SANFL games this year, then, you know, he's probably not even the right fit for our team with that sort of attitude. And I just don't think he's the sort of player that has that attitude, in my opinion. I just think that he's not going to be leaving us for that reason. He'll probably sign on towards the end of the year. And, you know, all those sort of complaints and discussion of him potentially leaving because he's not playing AFL will just be swept away.
Look, I think it's a media beat-up. I think they're sniffing it around for another Dangerfield. And I agree with you, Scorpus. I just don't think it's going to happen. So
I just want to put this to you though. Richie was sort of indicating that a team whose colours are red and black might be the team that's sniffing around, and that a trade might even be well being be discussed right now. Now, I'm not saying that's right, but I'm saying what I'd like to put to you, if they said to us, we'll give you pick one, because they said they are to trade pick one, for Brad Crouch and your draft, first round draft pick, would you do it?
Not a chance.
Yeah. Oh, it's a tough one. It's not necessarily a start the car moment, but I mean, our first round draft pick, you just don't want to see losing a guy like Brad Crouch. I mean, that's losing like a first round draft pick and, you know, another, well, I mean, it's an unproven first round draft pick, but that's like almost losing two really quality players for the first round pick. So I think there's a lot of talk this year that the first round is pretty even and there's no clear standout for pick one anyway. So yeah, I'm not sure I'd do that. Jenkins, on the other hand, that would be, yeah, a bit more interesting for that one.
Yeah. Don't forget that we picked up Brad in the mini draft. So effectively it'll be costing us two first round picks. I think this is all a beat up, and I'm sure the Bombers have been sniffing around at Brad Crouch and probably 200 other players. They've got to rebuild their list, but there will be a spot for Brad Crouch sooner rather than later. But I'm with you, Scorpus. I don't think Crouchy would actually be the sort of bloke that would spit the dummy because he's not getting a game. I think he would be more concerned about putting in performances that would lead to him getting picked. We'll have a chat about the SANFL result in a moment. But the word is from a few people that he's been put through a mini pre-season at the moment, a five-week block. And I reckon that we might see him come back into the team at some stage. And you think that a bloke like Dougie or maybe D-Mac would make way for Brad at some stage, but it would have to be a fit and firing Brad Crouch, because at the moment, from what we've seen of him in the AFL team this year, he's not bringing anything that Dougie or D-Mac wouldn't bring. So he needs to they need to be confident that when they bring him in, he's going to be able to produce.
Well, you can't argue with that. I mean, that's absolute logic. The only question in my mind is that whether I know the Victorians love stirring the pot, and as you said before, trying to create another Dangerfield situation. But it always does get, you know, when it keeps on going and going and he hasn't signed, it does start to worry a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. A bye week is traditionally a week where maybe a little bit of activity happens. I know they're on a four-day break. They come back on Friday, I think. I wouldn't mind betting that we see some movement on JJ and also Brad Crouch over the next couple of weeks. The one that I'm thinking may be a little bit up for grabs is JJ. I think he's the type of guy that may see opportunities elsewhere for bigger money. I don't want to see us paying him more than about $550 a year, and he can certainly get more than that somewhere else. So if the money's the lure for JJ, he may well be off.
Yeah, I don't want to lose him, though, because if you look at the mix in our forward line, we've got such contrasting types of forwards. That's one of the reasons why they can't man up on us, because we've got a big, big, fast bloke in Jenkins who, I know you say he seagulls a lot, but he also earns a lot as well. You've got Walker, who can be a very good centre-half forward. And then you've got the various support players, McGovern and the two little blokes running around in Eddie and Charlie, and Lynch's lead-up. I mean, it's just a... We've never been in this situation before. We've had such a mix in our forward line.
Well, I don't disagree. I think I'm certainly not saying that I'd like to see JJ leave, but I think of all of our players, he's the most dispensable. He's the one that if you're going to lose one, he's the one that you could probably afford to lose, not only because of what he brings, but also because we've got waiting in the wings as well, Macca.
Well, I reckon he's already re-signed. I reckon they're just waiting to announce it.
I hope you're right, Scorpus.
I think it's one of those things that we see, even last year when Sloan was about to be re-signed by the club, that We see these large offers suddenly start appearing in the media from various different clubs, and I think last year it was St Kilda, was it, that was putting up a fairly big offer for Sloane? Yeah, I think the sort of thing that might... This is just pure speculation from my part here, that when the club has already re-signed the player and they're just waiting for that opportune moment to sort of, you know, come out and announce it and have all that big fanfare, that the clubs who were chasing him suddenly start getting the, you know, the player's pretty keen on staying at the moment, and they start upping their offer, and we start seeing these large offers getting leaked to the media and everything, and it's because the player's already signed and they can't sign these big offers, so they keep upping the offer to try and lure them more out of the team. And I reckon that there's a little hint of that with this JJ contract, and I just have a small feeling here that he's already signed earlier in the season and that they're just waiting to announce it.
I don't know that he's necessarily signed, but he may well have agreed to terms which they'll announce, so I reckon, after the bye and just before we resume playing again.
Yeah, look... I mean, at the end of the day, we know from the Dangerfield situation that speculation is just going to do nothing but drive us all crazy. And whilst he's not Dangerfield quality, there's no doubt that him being part of our forward mix, as you said, Macca, just gives us a ton of versatility. And, you know, it was highlighted a couple of times in the coverage on Saturday night that... His Joe the Goose goals aren't there just because he's camped in the goal square. He's got a massive engine. He's quick for a big fella. And whilst we'd all like to see him, I think, take one or two more contested grabs a game, his ability to burn off his opponent going back towards goal is probably unparalleled in the league, including blokes like Franklin.
Can't argue with that.
Anyway, I think we've probably done that to Dash. Obviously, we will discuss in more detail on Tuesday night, so we'll probably leave it there. I just, given the minor upset of the Giants over the Sydney Swans, I'll just go through the ladder as it stands after the week's games, notwithstanding we've obviously got Collingwood Melbourne to come. North remain on top, a game clear of Geelong, who are now in second over the Swans, just by a couple of percentage points. North look a little vulnerable, however, with their percentage being down actually even below ours, I think. Yep. So they've got the second worst percentage in the top eight. So if we manage to... Well, Hawthorn managed to knock them off next week, and then we manage to get them the week after, which I expect that we probably will. We could see them tumble down quite quickly. We got the Bulldogs after their solid win, staying in fourth spot. We got the Hawks moving up to fifth, Giants sixth, Adelaide moving up to seventh, and West Coast now the team under the gun, one game clear in eighth. Just out of the eight, we've got Port, who could have drawn even on points with West Coast had they beaten Western Bulldogs, so that's disappointing for them. Similar with Carlton, who really needed to win considering their percentage is quite low. Melbourne play tomorrow back on 20 with St Kilda. Richmond also on 20. Then we're down to Collingwood, who play tomorrow. The Suns on 12, Frio on 8, and then the Lions and Essendon on 4 points each and vying for that number one draft pick. So a quick chat, as we were talking about before, about Bradley Crouch. It's probably a good segue to just have a quick recap of the SANFL game that was played. Adelaide SANFL team played Norwood and got up quite comfortably, 4-16 to 7-11. We were never really headed in that game and ran the game out quite comfortably. Now, I didn't see the game. Did either of you see the game?
Not over here in Victoria, unfortunately.
No, I was too busy watching all the AFL games, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, get a load of some of these stats. Ricky Henderson led the stats count with 41 disposals, 24 kicks, 17 handballs, 11 marks. What else did he have? 8 inside 50s, 4 rebound 50s. Solid game from Hendo. This one pleases me. Cam Ellis-Yolman, 39 touches, 16 kicks, 23 handballs, 5 marks, looks like 5 clearances, 3 inside 50s. Solid game from Cam. Bradley Crouch, 37 disposals and pleasingly 24 kicks, 13 handballs. 4 marks, 10 tackles from Brad. That's really good to see. A bit of intent there. 7 clearances. They're the kind of numbers, 6 inside 50s. They're the kind of numbers that we want to see, right, Macca?
Can't argue with that. I think the 10 tackles in particular as well. We know he could always find the ball, but when you haven't got the ball, you also have to do a bit of work as well. And 10 tackles indicates he was doing that.
Yeah. 9 inside 50s, 6 inside 50s, 4 rebound 50s. Very good from Bradley. Andy Otten had a good game, 31 touches, 10 marks. Good to see him in form. Jake Kelly also, 27 touches. Alex Keith playing in defence, I would imagine, 22 touches, 9 kicks, 13 handballs, 7 marks, 4 tackles. Pretty solid. 4 inside 50s too, so they must have been playing, pushing up pretty hard. Troy Menzel, 21 disposals, 11 kicks, 10 marks, 11 kicks, 10 handballs, 7 marks, 4 tackles from Menz, 5 inside 50s, only kicked the 1 goal though. Where did our goals come from? M. Lee.
Luke Loudon.
Who's M. Lee? Yeah, Luke Loudon kicked 4 goals, 3 from 16 touches, 5 marks. Also had 13 hitouts, the big Luke. Who's M. Lee? He must be a
top-up player. He kicked it behind, though.
Oh, I'm looking at the wrong line, that's why. Hunter kicked
had 2 goals. Yeah.
Hunter kicked 2 goals, 1. Harry Deer, disappointing, only 1 goal, 2. I expected him to come on a bit, but he seems to be stagnating a bit at the moment. Jono Beach, a relatively quiet game against Nord, who aren't all that special. Only the 18 touches. 9 marks, though. Peter J would be looking for more from him. Tommy Doody played all right, Dowdy. Harry Wigg, only the 20 touches. Relatively quiet game from Harry Wigg. But overall,
only
pretty...
Only the 20?
Oh, he is playing midfield. He's playing mids, and when you got Henderson getting 41, you'd want Harry Wigg to be getting more than 20.
Well, I was reading this interesting post just... I was browsing through the SNFL thread just while the SNFL game was going, just because, you know, it was on TV in Adelaide and everything. Yeah, one of the guys on the board as a 77 has a pretty good wrap up of what the players look like on the day, and he said that the first thing, Brad Crouch is back. It was really hard at the contest, tackled hard, very good disposal, bursting away from packs. So I think he was very impressed with Brad Crouch on the day. It also seemed like Menzel was one of the best on ground. He thinks that the output of him will at least equal McKay. He had a very good work rate, very smart, was getting all over the ground, so it's good to see from Menzel there. He thinks that Dude will be a player for us, really solid in defence, great leap, very athletic. Harrison Wigg, he said, looked a little bit lost in the midfield at times, but did some great things, was involved for patches, really good kick. Alex Keith, the most experienced of our defenders, apparently, so... Yeah, good to see him there. As far as Henderson is concerned, he said he had the most useless 41-touch game. said he was squibbing contest. I mean, Anthony Wilson, who weighs all of 60 kilos, was going harder at the marking contest. It's pretty useless. He said Mitch Grigg seemed like he was finished. Seems like his kicking is a bit sloppy and overcooks it. Luke Loudon is apparently a putrid footballer. Kicked 4-3, but could have kicked 2-6 because so many of his kicks were helicopters. And Cam Ellis-Yolman was a pretty typical game for him, did some good things, but some of the things he did, you would have your head down shaking in disbelief, apparently. So I think that's a pretty good summary of what happened on the game.
I gather he's not a Hendo fan either.
I think the only people who are Hendo fans are Hendo's family, to be honest.
That's not guaranteed, mate.
No, well, that's true, I guess. I mean, 41 disposals, you're still going to get the ball 41 times. So you know what you're going to get from Henderson. You're going to get not much contested effort. But if he gets gets his hands on the ball 41 times, and I assume he was playing on a wing, then, you know, you've got to give the guy some credit for that. Certainly,
yeah, Well, he doesn't find a man very often on those kicks either, though.
Yeah, Damsquick just saying, good game, Cam Bog. Are you talking about Cam Ellis-Yolman, Damsquick? I don't know. I didn't see the game. And he's also saying that Hardigan should be nervous about Alex Keith hanging around. Well, I think Hardigan's got a few points in the bank. I think the bloke that probably, you know, unfortunately, but I think the bloke that might be under the pump at some stage if Duday keeps moving along is Chaney.
Yeah, on the money. He gives 100% of what he's got to give, but if another player comes along with a little bit more class, he'd be the one to go.
That's the thing, isn't it, Macca? Just a little bit more class. Sometimes Chaney can overcook a kick or, you know, just find himself out of position. You're never going to doubt the guy's intensity and effort. Never, ever. You know what you're going to get from Kyle, but there was one turnover early in the last that if they'd taken advantage of it, could have swung the momentum back in their favour against West Coast. So, yeah, he'd be the one. I expect that Troy Menzel might come in for Mitch McGovern over the next couple of games. Poor old Mitchie looked a little bit overawed by the occasion on Saturday night, and whilst he redeemed himself to a certain degree, and I think he's got massive upside, Mitch McGovern. Just to give Troy Menzel a sniff, particularly against some of the lower teams that we've got coming up over the next month or two, you might see Troy come in to give Mitch a break.
One thing I would say, that if I was in the SAFL team at the moment, you'd be thinking to yourself, when is one of those buggers up there going to get hurt?
Yeah, well, we've had a fantastic run with injuries. It's really hard to, give opportunities to some of these younger guys when they actually have to push out some of our senior team on form. And, you know, we're sitting 8-4, so our form's been pretty good. I'm not sure that Troy Menzel will be necessarily pushing out Mitch McGovern. I think there's room for both Menzel and McGovern in the team. I'd be looking for him to push out David McKay. I mean, it's a bit of a different role, but, you know, you can never have too much class in your team. I think Menzel offers a little bit more, but it's a tough call. I do admit after, you know, we just won a game after coming back from the last quarter. So, yeah, it's difficult, but I think Brad Crouch and Menzel are probably the two guys from the SNFL that are most likely to come in. But, yeah, I've been also pretty happy to see that Duday, you know, a first-round pick. You'd be hoping that a first-round pick would be coming along quite nicely and ready to replace someone like Chaney in the near future.
Well, and when you consider that Duday was considered somewhat of a project player, he was a small surprise as a first-round selection. And
That's understating it, that's for sure.
And, yeah, many considered him, a player under development. But obviously Hamish Ogilvie saw enough in him and he's been vindicated because he's improving every week. And you would imagine that maybe not this year, but certainly next year, he'll be pushing for a spot. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, and let's not dwell on this for too long, but just as a comment to close off the conversation, it'll be interesting to see what happens with selection with both the SANFL and the AFL teams having a bye. I would think that unless there's some match-up there that we need to cover off, I doubt whether we'll see any changes against North Melbourne. What do you reckon, guys?
Yeah, I think it's borderline whether we go in unchanged or whether we reward some of the form from the guys in the SANFL. I definitely think there was a plan within the development staff and the conditioning staff to get Brad Crouch into the team at some fixed date, kind of like, you know, you mentioned the 5-week mini preseason. I think there was probably a lot of leading up to him coming into the North Melbourne game after the bye. The fact that we beat West Coast in Perth and a lot of players put in a good performance makes it hard to justify selecting Brad Crouch, but I think he's the most likely to come in. So for me, it's probably either one change, Brad Crouch in for maybe a Douglas, or we'll go unchanged either way.
Yeah, I reckon Scorpus has got it 100% right. It'll either be that or none, I reckon.
Yep. Well, guys, look, thanks very much for joining us. Thanks to Damp Squid, who's given us some feedback on the chat. I think the wrap tonight was very much about similar to how the Crows played on Saturday night, a very slow, scrappy start, but came home with a wet sail. So thanks very much, guys, for joining me tonight.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah, pleasure. And again, sorry for being so late, but, the missus always rules.
Yeah, no, look, mate, I'll be looking for a fine to be covered at some point in the near future. And, yeah, thanks, Scorpus, for coming to the rescue. And, Nikki, if you're out there, by God, you got some explaining to do. All right, guys. Well, that's it for the wrap this week. Now, just before I lead out, Tuesday Night Live this week, obviously with no game coming up, we'll be doing a mid-year report, and I will be starting a thread on the footy forums at some stage this evening, looking for your input, but we'll have as many of the panel on as are available on Tuesday night, giving you our thoughts on the season so far, who we reckon's going well, who we reckon's borderline, obviously... that will take us into the bye with no Thursday night preview this week, and obviously no Game of Crows this week either, Scorpus.
Yeah. Bit of a shame, but we'll get to.
You bet. Have we got winners for Game of Crows? You might as well announce them now, considering you won't be on Thursday night.
Yeah. So there are two people got their bold claims in, so they got 1 point each. We had Joel Constable yet again, another 1 point claim for. Matty Crouch to beat his season average disposal efficiency. And he was actually nearly 90% disposal efficiency against West Coast. So he gets a point for that. And the other one was, let me just take a look in the thread. It was Bombers 000, small players to kick more than tall players. That also got up.
Yeah, very good. And to the guys in the chat, Nikki was a no-show. You know, aside from the fact that if she played footy this weekend, we hope she's not injured or hurt. Hopefully she's just out on the sore somewhere and has forgotten that it's Sunday night. But Nick, if you're out there, we'll see you on Tuesday night and we'll give you the lip that you deserve. All right, guys, let's wrap that up. We're right on the hour, so good timing. Thanks again for joining me, and we'll see you on Tuesday Night Live.
Good night, all.
See you later.